Welcome to 24/7 World Radio Podcast with Brother Eric John Phelps on this January 11th, 2026. This will be a time of teaching, and it has to do with the two contracts which are temporal. The previous broadcast I gave today, which was my Sunday sermon, has to do with the two contracts that were spiritual. This one now is the two contracts that are temporal, or political, or sociological, whatever you want to call it, but has to do with your status and being protected and your fundamental right to work, or being deceived into accepting a federal privilege to work. So these are the two contracts. The contract that's going to protect your fundamental right to work is, first of all, the Bible. And the contract that's born out of the Bible is the Constitution of the United States of America, written by white Anglo-Saxon Protestants for the most part, and it was designedly after the Presbyterian form of government, which is representative in a republic. And then also there is the other contract that is an evil contract put upon us by the federal or national emergency war powers military government in 1943, called the Current Tax Payment Act, and that would involve withholding money at the source, namely where you're doing your work as an employee, as specifically defined in the Internal Revenue Code. And then with that being a federal privilege, you're holding national property or federal property, which is a privilege to labor. Whatever money you make in the exercising of that federal privilege is excise taxable with the income tax. So we either work as a matter of fundamental right, protected by the, as ordained by God and protected by the Constitution, or we work as a matter of federal privilege that arises from us filling out a contract called a Form W-4 if you're an employee, quote-unquote, or a Form W-9 if you are, quote-unquote, a trader business. Those are the two temporal contracts that confer federal privilege to do business as an artificial person, as first stated by Skull and Bonesman, William Howard Taft, before the 16th Amendment. So we're going to cover several things here now, but I want you to be able to see the simple truth that we can either work as a matter of fundamental right, where we pay no income tax on our wages, or we can work as a matter of contract, through a federal contract, and work as a matter of a federal privilege, whereby we owe the income tax on the wages or the monies that we earn. The choice is yours. And I would venture to say no one has ever taught you this before. Definitely no preachers, because they seem to be too busy to try to help their people hold on to their money and spend it for the Lord's works. So I want you to please listen carefully, and I'll try to make it as simple as possible, because it is. Because your fundamental right is protected by a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant document, Calvinistic, and your privilege to work has been conferred or put upon you very cleverly by the Society of Jesus, by the Jesuits. So once again, it's the Calvinists versus the Jesuits, the Bible in the hands of the common man versus no Bible in the hands of the common man. So I will also be teaching you that the Internal Revenue Code is the most wicked, sinful, ungodly, deceptive code in the entire 54 codes of the United States Code, that it is special law, that it is applicable only to certain persons, and it is not applicable to everybody. I will be teaching you that there's no law that requires every American to file a tax return. I will be teaching you that all that comes in is not taxable. It's not gross income. And the Jesuit IRS wants you to believe that all that comes in is income size taxable, income excise taxable. And they want you to believe that everybody is required to file a tax return in this country. And those are two great lies. They are simply not true. So we'll get to this in a few minutes, but I want to lay the foundation for when we get to the temporal contract that everybody has to fill out, or everybody thinks they have to fill out, which is a W-4, when they want to go to work for someplace. So, or if you're a business and you want to do business with another business, the other business wants a W-9 from you, okay, which is more evidence of federal privilege for a quote-unquote trader business. So we will go ahead and begin with the two contracts, temporal. We read in the Bible, our AV 1611 Reformation English Bible, in its present edition of 1769, the foundation of the American Constitution, we read here in chapter 4 of Ephesians, verses 28, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth." Herein the Bible acknowledges our God-given fundamental right to work. All of us have a fundamental God-given right to work. By the way, for those who are going to teach communism and Marxism and Jesuitism and atheism, if there is no God, you don't have a God-given right, and therefore everything you do is a privilege granted from men, which can be excised, taxed to death. You see how the importance of having God in the schools and the Bible in your schools limits government power, limits government taxing power? Because if you have a God-given fundamental right to work, it cannot be excised, taxed. It cannot be tax with an indirect excise tax, with which there is no limitation that can be put upon a uniform excise tax. Okay? So we have a God-given right to work. You have a God-given right to conduct your private business, which was called a common law right to work or common law business. Everything out of common law that's being protected is a fundamental right. Common law is of God. Roman civil law is of the devil. Common law acknowledges God. The Roman civil law acknowledges Hammurabi or Nimrod or the Pope, from which you get all your rights, all your privileges. Roman civil law is loved by the Jesuits. Common law is hated by the Jesuits because it limits their power as well as their power of taxation. If you have a common law fundamental right to work, exchanging your labor or your intellectual property for an agreed upon amount of money. Okay? It's an even exchange operating out of fundamental right, which there is no profit, income, profit, or gain, and therefore it cannot be excise taxed. The income tax is an excise tax. No matter what any lower federal court will tell you, the Supreme Court tells you that the income tax is an indirect excise tax to be laid as uniform, period. And an indirect tax can be avoided. A direct tax cannot be avoided. And so the income tax is not a direct tax. It is an income tax that is indirect and is uniform, to be laid on the income of individuals who rightfully owe it. I'll give you an example. Everybody in the military owes the income tax. Everybody in the military is working for the national government. Remember, it's not a federal government, it's a national government. It has been a national government since July 28, 1868, when the federal government became the national government. And I will teach that to you shortly. So the whole big picture is we're going to convert, like Manly P. Hall, we're going to convert this wonderful little limited Protestant republic into a Masonic empire from sea to shining sea, ruled by the Jesuit order for the benefit of the Pope. To make this empire We're going to have to conduct some wars. We're going to have to eliminate the American Indians, and they're Indians. They're not natives. They're American Indians. Russell Means, the chief of the Lakota Sioux, said, I am an American Indian. I'm not a Native American. It's more communism, more redefining of terms against white people, because we white people were the ones that wrote all the histories. The Indians didn't write any histories. The blacks never wrote any histories. Only we wrote the histories. Okay? Because we had the ability to read and write and make books and printing press and all those things that the other races didn't have. So, we have a fundamental right to work. We have no tribal chief telling us what we can do and what we can't do. We have no pope telling us what we can do and what we can't do. We have the law. The law is king. Lex Rex, Lex Rex, the law is king, as Rutherford wrote. So, we have a fundamental right to work, a common law right to work, okay, as opposed to a federal privilege to work. Now, most Americans are working as a matter of federal privilege, and they have no idea that they have a fundamental right to work. To exchange your life, labor, intellectual property in exchange for money. Okay? That's the system that made America great. That's how we became so prosperous. That's how we became the most educated and advanced nation in world history, with workers having their fundamental right to work. Okay? Well, what about the Chinese that came over here and built their railroads? They didn't have to come here. They came here because they wanted to. And if they were abused, they could have returned to China. So don't talk to me about white oppression of the Chinese or white oppression of the blacks. We white Anglo-Saxon Protestants and Baptists secured to ourselves and for ourselves the greatest government in world history that the Jesuits hated. And part of their counter-reformation was to destroy it. And part of destroying our Western civilization is to destroy the middle class. And to destroy the middle class, you have to get them to work as a matter of federal privilege so they can be taxed to death by the Emergency War Powers military government, while at the same time you have the robber barons and the super rich with their corporations and foundations that don't pay hardly any taxes. They've consolidated all wealth and manufacturing power into their hands, and the average American is just a coolie, just one of these niggas. If it was black, we'd be niggas. If we're Chinese, we'd be coolies. If we be white, we be, well, what are we? What are the Irish called? What mix? Yeah. Reduced to servitude. And you need to hate it. You need to hate the idea of being a slave for anybody. And do anything you can to prevent from being a slave, because there are the Jesuit order and there are Masonic secret societies that want to reduce you to slavery every day. They want to tax you to death. Every day. They want to tax your land every day. They want to destroy your currency so that it becomes worthless every day, so that purchases less. It takes more currency to buy stuff than it did before. That's destroying the middle class. That's what the Jesuits are masters of. That's what they've done here for the last 100 years at least. So in the purpose of this broadcast, I want to motivate you, to inspire you, to start working as a matter of fundamental right and not as a matter of federal privilege granted by the Emergency War Powers military government and District of Catholics, District of Coloreds, District of Communists. And our major solution is to get out of this empire, to declare our independence by either a county level or a state level, and begin to have our own sovereign nation once again. If there can be a sovereign nation of Cuba, there can be a sovereign nation of Pennsylvania. If there can be a sovereign nation of Haiti, there can be a sovereign nation of Rhode Island. I mean, we need to wake up and we need to start thinking what we can do and stop moaning and groaning and how bad it is. And stop being preoccupied with the news that's irrelevant. We need to sit down. We need to say, how was it in the past? What have they done to us? How can we reverse this and start doing it? Start spending our time and money to make this happen. Otherwise, you will continue to be a slave and your children will be more slaves than you are, than we are. we Americans. And it has to start, I will say, in the pulpit. If your preachers are not going to tell you these things, get out of your church and find some preacher somewhere that's going to be good, holding to sound doctrine, preaching from the Reformation Bible, and teach you biblical resistance to evil and to tyranny, under blood, striving against sin. Hebrews 12:4. You've not resisted under blood, striving against sin. One of our ministries as believers in Christ is to strive against sin. All sin, wherever it may manifest its ugly head. And particularly in politics, academia, education. Oh, education so full of sin. We have to resist it. We have to denounce it. We have to publish against it. We have to preach against it. It's work. It's effort. But it's worth it because it's the Lord's work. And he will reward us if we, and we will shall reap if we grow not. We shall reap if we do not faint. We shall reap if we faint not. To do good and continue in well-doing. So, we have a biblical right to labor, to exchange our labor for money. Okay? And the devil and his Jesuit order doesn't want us to exercise that right, because by so doing, we will become wealthy. And especially if we have an honest currency, an honest money system, where we have money that is gold and or silver coin, or currency redeemable in gold or silver coin. That is honest money. Everything else is dishonest money. Everything else is credit money. Everything else is money of account or money of exchange. It's all credit money. We do not want credit money. We want lawful money. We want a gold coin in our pocket or a silver coin in our pocket. Americans used to have these years ago. We had gold coins. We had silver coins. And that's what we used to purchase our items with. That's what we used to pay our workers with. So when they would exchange their labor for our silver coin, the silver coin would not depreciate, and it was something that they could save when they get older and what have you, but that doesn't lose its value. Today it's called junk silver. Silver quarters, silver dimes, and silver halves. You can get them in bags of $1,000 worth. It's 1,000 face value. So we want real money that is not destroyed by devaluation and being tied to some currency. Paper money. Paper money is of the devil. Hard money is of the Lord. Hard money was American money in Article 1, Section 10. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Paper money destroys you. And that's why Roger Sherman, that Bible-believing Calvinist, wrote his tremendous work, A Caveat Against Injustice, and the injustice was paper money, and the caveat against it was hard money, gold and silver. As an aside, the only time our nation was in the black, when it was not in debt, was during the presidency of the great and good Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson, who, by the way, treated the Cherokee Indians just fine, and he facilitated a treaty that was worth $12 million to them, $5 million in gold. So they, when they removed from the northwest corner of Georgia to the other side of the Mississippi, they had been paid for it. However, there were some evil men in power, like Martin Van Buren and his Secretary of War, Mr. Poinsett, from where we get the word poinsettia, who had the Cherokee begin to move in the fall into the winter, where there, what, 1,000 of them died. But that wasn't Jackson. Andrew Jackson was not the one behind the Trail of Tears. Andrew Jackson paid the Cherokee Indians. Okay, so let's get that one straight. So white men, stop being ashamed that you're white and thinking our white forefathers never did anything good for the Indians. We did. Gave them the gospel too. That's why the Geronimo, the great chief of the Apache, was saved, became a saved man at the preaching of a Baptist minister. Did you know that? So Geronimo's in heaven because some white man got the gospel to him. Shall we go on? So, you have a fundamental right to labor, and it's protected in the Constitution. The place in the Constitution where your fundamental right to labor is in the Ninth Amendment. The Ninth Amendment reads, "The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people." Well, one of the other rights retained by the people was the right to work, the common law fundamental right to work. We read two Supreme Court decisions. Quote, "Included in the right of personal property and the right of private property, partaking in the nature of each, is the right to make contracts for the acquisition of property. Chief among such contracts is that of personal employment, by which labor and other services are exchanged for money or other forms of money," unquote. That's your right of personal property, your right to make a contract to exchange your property for money. Who said this? Coppedge versus Kansas, it's a Supreme Court case of 1915, 236 U.S. 1, at page 2. Coppedge versus Kansas. So here's an example of the Supreme Court protecting your fundamental right to work in exchange for property. And it's not a privilege. Here's another Supreme Court case. It's called Murdoch versus Pennsylvania, 319 U.S., page 105, of 1943. Quote, "It could hardly be denied that a tax laid specifically on the exercise of those freedoms would be unconstitutional." Well, the freedom would include the right to labor. You cannot excise tax your right to labor, protected by another Supreme Court case. So we have two Supreme Court cases. We have the Ninth Amendment. We also have a case, a Supreme Court case, that reads as follows, quote, and by the way, the judge that gave this Supreme Court decision, it's the Pollock case of 1895, is the good, the great, the godly Stephen Field, one of my great heroes of the Supreme Court. The other is John Marshall, the other is Joseph Story, the other is John Marshall Harlan, this is Stephen Field. These are the greatest Supreme Court justices ever to be on the Supreme Court. So we have Stephen Field, and he says in 1895 in the Pollock decision, quote, "Among these unalienable rights, as proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence, is the right of men to pursue their happiness, by which is meant the right of any lawful business or vocation, in any manner not inconsistent with the equal rights of others, which may increase their prosperity or develop their faculties so as to give them their highest enjoyment." It has been well said that, quote, "the property which every man has in his own labor, as it is the original foundation of all other property, so it is the most sacred and inviolable." You see that? Your labor, your property and labor is sacred. Apart from the property of your life, the second most wonderful piece of property is your property to labor, to be able to work, to make some money, to feed your family and yourself. "The patrimony of the poor man lies in the strength and dexterity of his own hands, and to hinder his employing this strength and dexterity in what manner he thinks proper without injury to his neighbor is a plain violation of this most sacred property. It is a manifest encroachment upon the just liberty both of the workmen and of those who might be disposed to employ him. As it hinders the one from working at what he thinks proper, so it hinders the others from employing whom they think proper." And this is a quotation from Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, The Great Wealth of Nations. And this is in the case titled Butchers Union Company versus Crescent City Company, 111 U.S. 746. This is a Supreme Court case of 1883. Do you see now that your right to labor is your sacred property? And by the way, these evil people celebrating Labor Day, they're selling Labor Day because it's a federal privilege, boy. And we give you the privilege now to labor now, boy. Yeah. They ought to celebrate Labor Day because it's a God-given sacred right where we exercise our sacred right of labor in exchange for money. And it's never excise taxed. It's never income excise taxed. Anybody that would propose such a thing should be immediately tried for treason and taken out and shot. How dare you seek to pass a law to steal from us? Mr. Conspirator, wherever you be working for, either for the Pope or his secret societies or the Masonic Lodge or Skull and Bones or Knights of Columbus or Knights of Malta or any of these other secret societies that want to destroy you for the benefit of the Pope in destroying the historic white Anglo-Saxon Protestant middle class of America and of Canada and of England and of South Africa. Here's another Supreme Court case, which reads in part, "We are of the opinion that there is a clear distinction in this particular between an individual and a corporation, and that the latter has no right to refuse to submit its books and papers for an examination at the suit of the state." So the corporation has no right to refuse to show its books and records. "The individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen." This is 1906. It's the Hale versus Hinkle of 1906. Before the citizenship changed in 1933. "Upon his constitutional rights as a citizen, he is entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. His power to contract is unlimited." Dear listener, you have a right to contract your private business in your own way. You have a right to exercise your fundamental right in your own way without anybody interfering with it. As long as you're not depriving anybody of life, liberty, and property, your fundamental right to work and to labor and to invent and to do intellectual things, I mean, it's just wonderful. It's a fundamental right, and it cannot ever be excise taxed. Ever. And the Jesuits knew this in 1906. Again, this is Hale versus Hinkle, 1906. So after the Pollock decision, the wonderful Pollock decision of 1895, the opinion given by the good, the great, the godly Stephen Field, Bible believer, the Jesuits said, okay, well, what we need to do now is we need to amend the Constitution. And we need to have another amendment called the 16th Amendment to the Constitution that will, in a future day, enable us to excise income tax the working man, the wages of the working man. It's not going to happen in 1913. They're going to declare the 16th Amendment to be approved by 3/4 of the states, which it never was. What's his name? Benson, Bill Benson, went to all the state capitals and proved that there was not 3/4 of the states that had ratified the 16th Amendment, and he released it in a book called The Law That Never Was, and good luck trying to find it. So, the Jesuits said, we got to have an income tax here because that's one of the planks of our Communist Manifesto, because the Jesuits wrote the Communist Manifesto as they tutored Marx for several years, according to Otto von Bismarck. And this is well documented in my book, as well as Chris Pinto's release, DVD release, American Jesuits. So, what happens is they campaign for the 16th Amendment. And William Howard Taft, that 33rd degree Freemason and Skull and Bonesman, said that we need to have a tax for the privilege of doing business as an artificial person. That's right. So it was anticipated that sometime in the future that every American citizen would be made an artificial person, and that that artificial person would later be given a federal privilege to work so that they could excise income tax the money or the income derived from a federal privilege working as an artificial person, doing business as an artificial person. And your all caps entity is an artificial person. It's only for business. You were clothed with an artificial person on March 9th, 1933 with FDR. And so then, after they clothed you with this artificial all-caps person, which is a result of the birth certificate and the seizure of FDR March 6, 1933, on a Monday, They then approved and confirmed it. Congress approved and confirmed the proclamation on March 9th, and then FDR comes out with the second proclamation on March 9th, following up Proclamation 2039, this is 2040, whereby Congress has approved and confirmed all the proclamations of FDR that he would ever make beginning on March 4th, 1933. And so when he did that, on the basis of the Trading with the Enemy Act, he made you and me an enemy, belligerent, living in a state deemed to be an occupied territory. Every state in this country now is deemed an occupied territory under Trading with the Enemy Act. Everybody living in every state is deemed an enemy belligerent. And property follows the status of the owner, and enemy belligerents do not have title to property. They have custodial use of it, but they don't have real title to it. And that's where you get all this ability for the government to move you off your property and build another building, whatever they want. It's called eminent domain. Eminent domain is a result of March 9th, 1933. So, they passed the 16th Amendment. They declare it to be passed. But there are a few cases that say that the 16th Amendment did not confer any new power of taxation on the Congress. And the Bruchaber decision a couple years later will tell you that the 16th Amendment conferred no new power and that it's merely an excise tax, able to tax income derived from sources that would be otherwise excise taxable. And those were only two. In 1913, the 16th Amendment never gave this emergency war power, the civilian government at the time, the civilian government, we don't go to emergency war powers, military government until 1933. So in 1913, 20 years before 33, the civilian government is not taxing, excise taxing, the wages of the working man. And so from 1913 to 1943, for 30 years, the government, then the military government, 1943, would start excise income taxing the wages of the working man. So the 16th Amendment never enabled Congress to tax the wages of the working man until the working man would work as a matter of federally conferred privilege. And that happened in 1943 with the Current Tax Payment Act, where they would withhold your money from your paycheck. That's where they started their withholding, which is another sin. So, from 1913 to 1943, no income tax on a man's wages. And we still had silver coin in circulation from 33 to 67, until the Masonic Lodge took away our gold in 1933, and the Masonic Lodge took away our silver in 1967, with Freemasons FDR and Freemasons Lyndon Baines Johnson. Those two Freemasons took our gold and our silver from us. So don't tell me that the Masonic Lodge is some sort of virtuous association of men. They're thieves, and they're busy working for the Pope. Because the Jesuits have written all the rites of Freemasonry, according to one particular book I have here. So, it's a fact, from 1913 to 1943, no income tax on a working man's wages. And by the way, they pulled that off during World War II when all of our men were overseas so that the real manhood here couldn't stand up and fight against this Current Tax Payment Act and other things that the Jesuits military government were doing to the American people deemed enemies under Trading with the Enemy Act. U.S. citizen enemies under Trading with the Enemy Act. So we're going to go back into history a little bit here and American history. We've covered the fundamental right to work as opposed to a federal privilege to work. And I will teach you how they converted your fundamental right to work into a federal privilege after this series of things that happened. So in 1789, we have the ratification, declared ratification of the Constitution for the United States of America. 9 states ratified it. It went into play. Ultimately, 13 would by 1791, with Rhode Island being the last. So we have the glorious Constitution in place. During this time, no working man ever paid an income tax on his wages. From 1789 to 1943, that's 154 years, no working man ever paid an income excise, indirect excise tax on his wages, ever. So the Jesuits were working their way in attempting to reduce this white Anglo-Saxon Protestant limited federal republic into a race-mixed, miscegenated national republic that would be converted or operated as an empire, as the Holy Roman American Empire, from sea to shining sea. And so with that, then they would have the robber barons, the consolidation of all production into the hands of the cartel corporate capitalists. These are the evil capitalists. The good capitalists are individual men working, having a business, exchanging their property for money and competing with other businesses as to who could build the best project for the secret, for the lowest price. That's the only thing that produces wealth, by the way. So the Jesuits control the cartel capitalists, and the ones they would control would be the robber barons. And there's a book on it entitled Robber Barons, and it shows you how they consolidated all manufacturing ability in oil with Rockefeller, with steel, with J.P. Morgan, with the railroads, with Vanderbilt, with oil, with Rockefeller, and medical matters. They would create these huge, massive foundations and trusts. I have a book called The Life and Career of John D. Rockefeller, and in that book it tells you that he modeled his Standard Oil Trust after the Jesuit order, and that John D. Rockefeller considered himself to be the Black Pope, the Jesuit general of the Standard Oil Trust. Why? Because the Jesuits ran it. So before we go there, we're going to go to War of 1812. The War of 1812 is the Jesuit attempt using King George III to destroy our little white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Federal Republic with a limited government and with a population that was growing and advancing and producing invention after invention. That's why we Americans were known as the inventive Americans. Well, the War of 1812 didn't succeed. And so as a result, the Jesuits then agitated the tariff agitation. And Jackson said, I'm going to go down there and send my revenue cutters down the South. They're going to pay that tax. And he said, the next agitation is going to be the anti-slavery agitation. And that's what Jackson said in the 1930s. Meanwhile, remembering that the government is debt-free, Jackson has reintroduced hard money, and he also did away with a centralized Jesuitical second bank of the United States in 1836, thereabout. And he also would have protective tariffs. Hard money, no central bank, and protective tariffs. Those three things the great Andrew Jackson did, and we weren't in debt. Okay? Even though he was a Freemason, he was a low-level Freemason, he was a patriot, and he was not allowing any high-level Freemasonry to corrupt him. So, 1812, we got 1830s, then we have 1861 to 65. We got the War of Northern Aggression, when the North attacks the South. And they will do their very best to decimate the white Protestant Southern culture. They will destroy the city of Richmond, Virginia. They will destroy the city of Atlanta, Georgia, all white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, with black servitude there, black slavery, which the Bible teaches there's nothing wrong with slavery, only how you treat your slaves. Colossians chapter 4 tells us we need to be equitable with our slaves. But in no place does the Bible or did Jesus Christ ever completely condemn the institution of master-servant relationship. Never. So this bit about slavery being America's first sin is a bunch of communist crap. Okay? And you need to stand against that. So going on. 1861 to 65, we have the decimation of the white Protestant South by the North. It's run by the Jesuits. Openly, the policy of the papacy is to be behind the Southern Confederacy. That's why Jefferson Davis was acknowledged as the president of the Confederate States of America by Pius IX, making it look to the world like the Jesuit papacy was behind the South, when secretly it was behind the North. It wanted the North to win. By the way, the Irish, the Comstock kings of Nevada, Mackey, Flair, Flood, and O'Brien, they were all Irish Catholics. And it was those mines, those gold mines of Nevada and California that were used as collateral to finance the Yankee Union North in its 1.5 million man army for the decimation of the Protestant South. Yeah, Irish Catholics backing the North. That was the real problem, thing going on there, policy. So after the Jesuits destroyed the South, they put it under Reconstruction and tried to destroy every last vestige. They tried to forcibly race mix the whites and the blacks of the South, giving black supremacy. They wanted to establish black supremacy in the South. And so the Southerners wouldn't have it. They started their first Ku Klux Klan that really put an end to it with Nathan Bedford Forrest. It lasted for 4 years. In 1868-69, Nathan Bedford Forrest did away with the first Ku Klux Klan. Albert Pike took it over for the Jesuits, and then it would resurface in 1915. That's the second Klan, but the Jesuits had to destroy the Protestant American South. And so between the war and Reconstruction, they would greatly be successful. 1868, remember, the South was not fighting to protect slavery. The South was fighting to get out of an empire, of a union that had been anti-South and was centralizing powers in Washington. And so the Southerners fought to prevent centralization of power, and it was the old dialectic between the Hamiltonian Federalist parties in the North and the Jeffersonian Democratic Party in the South. That was the culmination of that, and you can read all about it in a book called A Youth's History of the Great Civil War, 1861 to 1865, by Horton. I think it's written in 1867. Get it. A Youth's History of the Great Civil War. So they proclaimed the 14th Amendment that was ratified by 3/4 of the states, which it wasn't, and that converted federal citizenship for whites into national citizenship for whites and blacks and later Asians. So that's the first big step to centralism. 1871, they centralized the city of D.C., finalizing it in 1878. And then in 16th Amendment's passed in 1913. 17th Amendment's passed in 1913, having direct election for U.S. senators, which is a sin and a crime. U.S. senators should be appointed by the state governments to represent the states. The senators were to represent the states, and the House of Representatives were to represent the people of the states. So it was just one more step towards communism with the 17th Amendment, where the states did not have any more representation by senators in the United States. 1933 is the great bulwark of this country, the great line of demarcation, when FDR declared a state of national banking emergency with Proclamation 2039 on March 6, which was a Monday, 1933. There was a four-day banking holiday. All the banks were closed. And on the Thursday, the last day of the banking holiday, Congress passed the Emergency Banking Relief Act, approving and confirming a Proclamation 2039 and all other proclamations, starting with March 4th. And then the same day, on March 9th, 1933, FDR would issue his second proclamation, Proclamation 2040, making Proclamation 2039 the law, with the Emergency Banking Relief Act bringing Trading with the Enemy Act inside the country. So 1933 is the big year. With this, they imposed emergency war powers military government. Civilian government was temporarily ousted because of the quote-unquote banking emergency. And the Congress has said an emergency is equal to a state of war. So, since that date, every American has been deemed to be a U.S. citizen, clothed with an artificial person, U.S. citizen, and that artificial person has an all capital letter name, and he's lost all of his fundamental rights. It has no fundamental rights. That entity has no fundamental rights. It's a corporation, or like a corporation. So you're clothed with an artificial person, with this all caps entity with an all caps name, and an all caps name is a military name, the name of the enemy belligerent. I can prove all of this. I teach it all in my private citizenship course. For three days for $5,000. And it's worth every penny of it, because you're not going to have to make all the mistakes I made. Okay, going on, you have 1929 is the Great Depression. 1933 is the emergency war powers military governments imposed. And so FDR becomes president in 1933. Hitler becomes chancellor in 1933. The Jesuits in control of Hitler and FDR and Churchill and Stalin are busy orchestrating all these political tools of theirs in control of the military for the purposes of the Second 30 Years' War, which will recommence in 1939. So from 1933 to 1943, for 10 years there is no excise income tax on the labor of the working man. I thought the 16th Amendment made that possible. No, it doesn't. The 16th Amendment said you can lay an excise tax, income tax, from whatever source derived. And in 1943, they're going to create millions of new sources called employees. Because all those employees will become a source when they contract from having a fundamental right to work to exercising a federal privilege to work. And the contract for the working man is the W-4, Form W-4. The W-4 is titled Employees Withholding Certificate. So, every time you go to apply for a job in this country, the person that you're applying to the job for hands this to you. Well, a W-4 is only for an employee. Well, what's an employee? We shall see. It's not what you think it is. It's not the common definition of employee. Employee has a specially defined definition by Congress so as to keep this within the confines of the Constitution, but wanting you to think it's all employees. That's why this Internal Revenue Code, this whole income tax bit, is the most deceptive, Jesuitical, evil, ungodly thing you can ever put your finger on, and it's the Jesuits who run the Internal Revenue Service through the Commissioner, the Secretary of Treasury, and the Commander-in-Chief. This is their boon to pay for their huge, massive military-industrial complex to wage war around the world for the benefit of the Pope. When your money is merely paper money created by printing presses and not real money that has to be dug out of the ground like gold and silver, they have an unlimited ability to wage war. I have to laugh at all these quote-unquote liberals that are against the war, but they're all for paper money. They're all for money of account. They're all for credit money. If they were going to be consistent, they would say, we're not for all these foreign wars, and we're not going to go be policemen around the world, and therefore we're not going to have any paper money to finance this. But that would be something that a patriot would say, and of course none of them are patriots. So the question is, what is a statutorily defined employee? Well, we go to the Internal Revenue Code, that's Title 26, at 3401B, employee. For purposes of this chapter, the term employee, quote unquote, includes, I want you to hear that word includes, because I'm going to give you a definition for it, includes an officer, employee, or elected official of the United States, a state, that's elected official of a state, or any political or an elected official of any political subdivision thereof, or the District of Columbia, or any agency or instrumentality of any one or more of the foregoing. That's what an employee is. What does the word include mean? Well, let's take a look at what the Supreme Court said. For the definition of the legal term including, includes or including, We read from Montello Salt Company versus Utah of 1911, which is a Supreme Court case at 221 U.S. 452. Now here's what the United States Supreme Court defined including to mean. The Utah State Supreme Court also considered that the word including was used as a word of enlargement, the learned court being of the opinion that such was its ordinary sense. That means includes means what you think plus what we're saying here in the law, in the statute. So includes is a term of enlargement. What you think plus what we say. Since when is anybody writing a law like that? But that's what the Utah State Supreme Court decided. It's a term of enlargement. And by the way, the Utah Constitution does the same thing. Includes has to do with a term of enlargement. So they're contrary to what the Supreme Court had to say. Not Utah, but Idaho. So we read here, the court says, Utah State Supreme Court considered including a word of enlargement. With this, we cannot concur. We don't agree. Utah State Supreme Court's wrong. All you Mormons out there in the Utah State Supreme Court are all wrong. We know you're working for the Jesuits because your whole Mormon industry is run by the Freemasons. They're subject to the Pope, but you're wrong. It is its exceptional sense, as the dictionaries and cases indicate. Well, what dictionary? Well, the dictionary that was important then was Webster's American Dictionary of the English Language of 1828, which defines including as containing or comprising. So therefore, the term employee includes or comprises or contains only an officer, employee, elect official, United States, state, political subject, and rep, district, Columbia, municipality, thereof. In other words, only government workers. An employee is a government worker. Are you a government worker? When you go down to work at McDonald's, are you working for the government? That's what an employee says, according to the Internal Revenue Code and the definition of includes by the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court rulings and the code are of an equal footing before IRS agents. You see how you've been conned? You see how you've been conned by the lawyers and the CPAs and academia to make you think that everything that comes into your hand is income excise taxable? And therefore, everything is a federal privilege. They're not going to tell you that. That's what they've done to us. So that's what they've done to labor. Everybody working for the unions, everybody working for the labor, got to fill out now, form W-4. Fill it out now, boy. Well, no, I work as a matter of fundamental right here, foreman. No, you don't. You fill out that W-4, you're not going to be working here. So shut your mouth and get filling it out. We're treated like slaves. Just get rid of it. Get used to it. Look in the mirror and say to yourself, I am a slave. I am a slave. I'm treated like a slave, I act like a slave, and I never do anything about it. That's you. That's the vast majority of American people out there. Slaves. Afraid to ask the ultimate question, why do I have to pay an indirect excise tax on my wages derived from my God-given labor? But not only the working man, but also the businessman. All you carpenters and concrete workers and rebar tires and steel guys, steel hanging steel. You guys that have businesses doing that. The IRS wants you to think you're in a trade or business. And that you're involved in the conduct of a trade or business. That's what they want you to think. But let's take a word, definition of the word trade or business. It's 26 U.S.C. 6041. 6041, information at source. All persons engaged in a trade or business shall render a true and accurate return to the secretary, setting forth the amount of such gains, profits, and income, and the name and addresses of the recipient of such payment. Yep. So, this is a trade or business. So let's see what trout trader business is defined. 26 U.S.C. 7701A26. The term trader business includes. What did we say? What did the Supreme Court say includes means? It only means what follows. It's a term of limitation. It's a term of exclusion. So, the term trader business, quote unquote, it's not trade or business, it's trader business, one term, it's a legally defined term, includes the performance of the functions of a public office. All you guys in business, working your hardest to pay your bills and pay your loans off and, you know, bidding contracts and whatever, are you performing the functions of a public office? Are you a deputy? Are you a sheriff? Are you a judge? Are you a commissioner? Are you a president? Are you a whatever? Are you performing the functions of a public office? That's what the Internal Revenue Code says, because it's careful not to include your fundamental right to conduct your private business according to Hale versus Hinkle. That Supreme Court case of 1906. So they very cleverly wrote the code for those who know the law, but for those who want to infer that they have a trader business, why they're going to be paying the income excise tax every year. Getting robbed. Now remember, we Americans are deemed enemies under Trading with the Enemy Act, as brought into this country by the Emergency Banking Relief Act. We are under a military government, emergency war powers military government, that treats all U.S. citizens here as enemies. Therefore, in being treated as enemies, they can deceive us. There's a book on the Mossad titled By Way of Deception. You need to get it, read it. But all this warfare by deception is really championed by the Jesuits in their book that they brought out of the Far East and translated it into, I think it was French or English, and it's called Sun Tzu, The Art of War. In Sun Tzu's The Art of War, they can lie, they can cheat, they can deceive the enemy. And because we're the enemy, and the military government in Washington's working for the Pope, deeming us to be the enemy, it can deceive us. And hence, that's why we have this deception in the Internal Revenue Code. You thinking that the word trader business and employee has the same common meaning in the code? It doesn't. It's been specifically defined so as to not include private businesses, private trades, private employees. They're all working for the government, performing the functions of a public office, federal, state, county, city, parish, whatever. Now, when you fill out the W-4, that is your contract, by way you contract with the federal government, and you have a federal government identification number, your privilege number, and when you fill that out and it's not a qualified signature, you now have volunteered to pay the income excise privilege tax. And remember, equity will not come to the aid of a volunteer. You're stuck until you undo it. Take my tax class, I'll teach you how to do that. And so, it's the same way with a W-9. When your business wants to do business with another business, that business requests that you give them a W-9 so they can write off whatever they paid to you. But the W-9 has to do with trader business. Trader business is a government form for a government trader business. It has nothing to do with you men in the private center, in the private sector, working yourselves to as much as you can. All you pro ball players, you're not a trader business. All you entertainers, you're not a trader business. I think how they ran Wesley Snipes into prison because he didn't know this. You're not a trader business. And so, since you're not a trader business, you don't have any requirement to file an income tax return, but I teach you something else to do. But you don't owe the tax. You don't owe the privilege tax, the excise tax, the war tax. You can work as a matter of fundamental right, conducting your private business as a matter of fundamental right, without ever paying in quarterlies and saving some of your hard-earned profits so that you can turn around and give it to those in need, or to invest in your business to make it bigger so that you have more people working for you so you can make more money for the benefit of doing the Lord's work and also helping those in need. So in conclusion, do you work as a matter of fundamental God-given right protected by the Ninth Amendment to the Constitution and several Supreme Court decisions? Or do you work as a matter of federal privilege granted from the federal government, from the national government, actually, by filling out a W-4 and a W-9? Do you? Well, I maintain that for the Lord to bless us, we need to go back to working as a matter of fundamental right, stop paying the income excise privilege tax, stop building the huge, massive military-industrial complex that's ultimately going to be used against us. And it doesn't matter which political party, they're both working for the Pope. Whether it's Trump or Obama or Clinton or Bush or any of those senators, they're all busy connected somehow with the Council on Foreign Relations or the National Council for National Policy or some secret societies, ultimately working for the benefit of the papacy overseen by the Roman papacy in this country, the prince of the church, as well as the Jesuits from 28 major universities in this country. They run it. And you're their property until you change your status and until you exercise your fundamental right to work. May God help us to do so in obedience to the Word of God. Let us labor and work with our hands that we might give to those in need. Brother Eric John Phelps, 24/7 World Radio Podcast. It's the second one today of January the 11th, 2026. This concerns the two contracts. The contract of the Constitution, protecting your fundamental right, and the contract of the W-4 or W-9, giving you a federal privilege to work and thereby waiving your fundamental right. So which contract are you going to use and rely on? Again, the two contracts, temporal, it's January 1st, January 11th, 2026. Brother Eric John Phelps, 24/7 World Radio Podcast. You can send your gifts to rbpbchurch@comcast.net or rbpbdonate@comcast.net, or you can send it to RBT, P.O. Box 306, Newmanstown, Pennsylvania 17073 for the check, or you can give to Cash App at #Eric, E-R-I-C, John, J-O-N, Phelps, P-H-E-L-P-S. Appreciate your gifts, and for $20, I'll send you my 30-page affidavit that explains all of this, and this is my key affidavit that I use in my tax class. So if you want a copy of that, you can just email me at rbpbchurch@comcast.net, and I will send it out to you, and you can study it and maybe even take my tax class in the future. It's $4,000 for 3 days, worth every penny of it. So until we meet again, Lord bless, Maranatha, as you read the AV 1611 Reformation English Bible, in his present edition of 1769, as you serve him and do his will. Until then, Lord bless.